Life is about constant evolution. Always better today than we were yesterday.
Welcome to The Only Easy Day Was Yesterday. I'm your host, Scott Williams, and today we have Navy SEAL and MMA pro fighter, Bobby Winther. Welcome.
Hey, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Bobby, they tell me that your fighting name is The Ghost. Can you explain a little bit about that before we get into all your background and everything?
Absolutely. I wish the story was cooler than it actually is, but I have a tattoo on my arm, and the character, it's from a video game called The Ghost of Tsushima, which is like he's a samurai that pretty much has to abandon this, or has to go against the samurai code in order to beat the Mongols that had like invaded his territory. So he has to kind of like sneak behind the scenes a little bit to defeat the enemy rather than just like fight him like outright. And he kind of had like a lot of like rift between the actual samurai that he was with and then just kind of like the people he was rebelling against too. So I kind of liked the reason why I picked that as a nickname for me is like a warrior that you're gonna have to do what it takes to win sometimes. And about like SEALs were all about being sneaky and being behind the scenes, so I kind of thought it fit really well in that. And also I thought the game was pretty cool too.
Yeah, well, I guess there's some themes there about resilience and adaptability, which is something that we talk a lot about here at NSW, is the ability for operators to naturally adapt in their environment, overcome obstacles, and keep moving despite challenges. And you probably see that a lot in just training for MMA, right?
Oh, all the time, yeah. Like, for mixed martial arts, it's the most fundamental form of warfare, I like to explain. It's like 1v1, no weapons, just our hands, just whatever rule set we're going in right there. And you're constantly met with different skills that pose different problems to you. So, like, if someone's really good at defending wrestling and that's your best skill, well, you got to figure out a way to make that work for you inside the fight. I always say it's the most fundamental form, because as you get to like actual warfare within like the platoons, you have teams, you have weapons now, and you have a lot more assets, which is a lot more things to control. But the idea and the concept of warfare still remains the same. They may have something that deters you from moving to a specific area, so you have to answer that in a different way, whether that be with like aircraft, whether that be with a different fire team. So that's kind of the, as far as the resilience and adaptability, it's constantly going, and I feel like MMA is such a great way to practice that daily.
Your role here at Naval Special Warfare is a combatives instructor at our Advanced Training Command, which is attached to the center here. So you're applying lessons that you learn in MMA to the curriculum?
Correct, yeah. So I've been doing the sport for quite some time now, and I started jiu-jitsu about like 12 years ago and then slowly picked up wrestling and striking and then full-on mixed martial arts competition-wise about 3 years ago. And when I got to the command, since I had a pretty extensive knowledge in the sport aspect of it, and I didn't have any real-world experience for the tactical side of things. So the shop I was with fortunately had a lot of guys who had a lot of hands-on experience within Iraq and Afghanistan, and we both just kind of, all of us kind of put our minds together and just kind of threw things at the wall to see what stuck. Like, okay, and here was the tactical situation. How would we use combatives to deal with it? Cool, I would use this technique, that technique, that technique. And then they can be like, well, that doesn't make sense because of the team-based environment or because we may be putting our buddies into a bad position. So now it kind of made us like work and adapt the combatives to whatever that tactical situation was.
In a tactical situation where you're doing effectively urban combat, you're in close quarters. Mm-hmm. It's room to room. We have seen plenty of examples in the past where SEALs have had to come into direct contact with the enemy, sometimes closer than pistol range, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like in your face kind of close, mm-hmm. and had to actually lay hands on the enemy. So this is where your training comes in as a combatives instructor. Is what happens when you get face to face with the enemy.
Absolutely. Part of my job is just putting that, like when you do get face to face with the enemy, is for it to almost be like autopilot, like to be that instinct reaction, like making sure you're doing the fundamentals of fighting instinctually that keep you and your teammates safe. The more you practice it, the more it becomes an instinct, and then you can start actually thinking while you're doing the thing, rather than being so overwhelmed when that problem happens and then being like, oh gosh, what do I do? No, you already know what you do. Then now we can think, okay, here's the situation being presented to me. Let me use X, Y, and Z tactics to finish the job or subdue the suspect.
Let's talk a little bit about MMA, right? So you have a professional career.
Mm-hmm.
What is your record right now?
Currently, it's 1-0. Hopefully, by the time this podcast comes out, it's going to be 2-0. I fight this Friday.
Wow, that's awesome. And it's a cage match?
Pretty much the easiest way is like whatever you see on UFC, like on the TV, that type of cage is what I'll be fighting in.
I see. So when we talk about the definition of mixed martial arts, how does that translate into SEAL training as well? A lot of guys will ask, hey, what kind of fighting styles do they study, do SEALs use?
So primarily now we use a primarily grappling heavy system. So what that means is if you watch MMA, there'll be a lot of like striking in the takedowns, and there is that striking meaning like boxing or kickboxing. There'll be that to bridge the gap into the grappling, because we have weapons. Generally that like long distance area is generally controlled with a weapon, so we don't see as much striking. Not that we don't see any, we definitely have times where we throw strikes, but most of what we teach combatives is now a grappling heavy system. So that way, that means like wrestling, wall grappling. That's why MMA is such a great tool to use for our operators, is because they have a vertical surface behind them, which no other sports have. That's a relatively newer martial art and a new problem set for martial artists to deal with. So, and for us, because the most likely scenario we'd get into that would be in a enclosed area like a room, the walls are everywhere. So we need to be able to adapt to that. Kind of to answer your question, a grappling heavy approach with aspects of striking within the grappling there.
Okay. So we're talking something that might resemble Brazilian jiu-jitsu, Krav Maga, things like that?
Yeah, aspects of these can all be what's considered mixed martial arts. So I think for us is like American style wrestling, jiu-jitsu, and then some basic boxing and stuff. We don't, as far as like within the actual operators like arsenal of things we want to teach them, we don't teach them a ton of like kickboxing kicks. We may maybe teach one like push kick, but it's either that, elbows, punches, and then knees up and close. Those are like the only striking applications we really use from like the Muay Thai and the kickboxing mm-hmm. arts.
Yeah, sounds like some elements of Muay Thai.
Yeah, there's a lot in there for
but
sure.
But that's short range, right?
Oh yeah, really short range. And that's
you
why
you get pinned up against a wall, or your guy is pinned up against a wall. If you're that close, then
exactly. Yeah, it's like if we're that close, I need to make it not just a grapple. And this is why mixed martial arts is such a cool sport and unique in that sense, is that you can strike within the clinch, you can strike on the ground, which you can't in wrestling. So it's like you get to see like, oh, this is how you use these short range weapons. This is how you get to like employ these things. And when we're teaching down at the base, we use all those weapons, but we also recognize that we have weapons of our own that we can use or can employ. So figuring out, hey, what is the range of each weapon that I'm using on my body, and then of my like actual tools that I have too.
So it's like a John Wick movie.
It's actually the best way to think about it. I think John Wick crushes it. Obviously, you know, John Wick is like a little over the top, but I wish we could all get there. That'd be awesome. If we could all be like John Wick, that would be so sick.
How did all this begin for you? How did you become interested in being a Navy SEAL?
So I got interested. So my brother joined the Marine Corps, and he joined when he was 17. And even way before he joined, I kind of always felt like drawn to the military, and I don't quite understand why. I just kind of was like, I like it. I think that's a respectable thing. So
it's a calling.
Yeah, exactly. So I kind of like always had that inkling that that's the route I wanted to go. I just didn't know how I was going to get there. So my brother joined, and then I was always interested in like the medical side of things. Like I always thought it was cool to be like on the op, and then like if someone went down, they were like, "Hey, we need you," and I was like, that guy, like the medic. So I thought, okay, my brother's a Marine. I'd like to be a Marine, but I want to do the medic thing. So you can only be a corpsman for that. So you have to be in the Navy. So I started looking into the Navy. I think I typed in online. I typed in Navy, and then like the auto populated like SEALs. And I've heard of SEALs, but I didn't know what they were. And I was like, well, let's look at all the options to make sure. And then I clicked the button, and it took me right to the SEALSWIC website. And I remember seeing all these like videos, and I just like dove deep on the website because they had like a guy jumping out of a plane. I was like, whoa, these people jump out of planes and they're in the Navy? This is wild. So I like kept going down. I was like, oh, that's cool. I was like, they're shooting guns and moving around, like the land warfare aspect. I was like, that seems like what Marines do too. So I was like, okay. And my like 13-14 year old brain is like telling me all this. And then I said,
wait, what website was this on?
The SEALSWIC website, SEALSWIC.com.
Oh, that sounds really familiar, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Shameless plug. Okay, sorry. Go ahead with your story, please.
So as I was like diving deep in the website, I just kind of was like, I think I can do this. So I was like, I think I can do it. I want to do it. And I sat on it for like a while. And I thought about it every day for like a year. And then every day after that, I was like, I can't wait to do it. So when I was 14, after seeing the website, I was like, all right, yeah, this is cool. I'm getting in, and that's what I want to do. Oh, also my deciding factor for it was I saw you could be a medic within the SEAL. So like you could be a SEAL and then you could be a medic. So that crossed off my boxes, and I was like, sign me up, I'm in. So I looked at what it took to be a SEAL, like what the criteria was, and you could be 17 if you wanted to, as long as the parents signed you and you passed the PST. Mm-hmm. And I was like, cool, what's the PST? And it was the 500 yard swim, the push-ups, sit-ups, pull-ups, and that run. So I was like, cool, if this is what I gotta do to be a SEAL, let me just get really good at these things. So I think the test is like on there, like how they run the test. So I was like, okay, let me just run myself through the tests and then keep doing that until I get better at them. And
use the PST calculator.
Yeah. So like once I like every time I did it, I saw that they had this PST calculator. So I threw all my numbers on there, and it like compared my results to people who had already taken the test or people that were already going through training, and it would like rank you out on that. And then, so I was like, okay, I better be in like the top like 10, like eventually, like that was the goal for me. And I don't remember what I started out with, and I don't remember what I ended with, but I remember just like, okay, let me just like keep doing this until it's like acceptable. And it was super, super cool. I was like, dang, I was like, I can compete with some of the people that are going through BUDS right now. And I was like, that was just a cool thing for me. I thought it was awesome. So it was like tangible, and like I could see the results that I was putting in, and I was getting closer to my goal. So it didn't seem so impossible to me.
Yeah. What part of the country were you in at the time?
Philadelphia.
Okay. And then you got hooked up with an NSW mentor or a recruiter, or how did that whole accession part work?
Yeah, so when I was 17, hit up a recruiter, and I told him, I was like, I want to be a SEAL, don't want to be anything else. And he's like, okay, cool, take the PST. And then once I took the PST with a mentor out there, his name is Chief Black. He might still be a mentor out there. And I took the PST through him. The first one I took, I ended up getting picked up on. And then I had my contract going like right away. I was a senior in high school. And then by the time when I graduated, I would just leave for boot camp like a month after that.
Mm-hmm. Training for the PST, that's got to be tough. I mean, sure, it sounds easy. You've got push-ups, you got sit-ups, you got pull-ups, which are not easy for everybody. You got the run. Some people have a problem with that. What about the swim? Swim's Are you a swimmer?
So
at 14?
Yeah. So at 14, I had like no formal swimming training, like other than just like learning how to do it in a pool. So when I decided I wanted to be a SEAL, I was like, well, I don't know what the side stroke is and I don't know how to be fast at it. So let me join my like swim team and just get really good at swimming because I'm probably going to need that. And once I did that, I got a lot better at swimming and my times for the PSTs went way down, which like down and is a good thing in swimming. So it went way down. So my times were doing a lot better. And then I kind of supplemented that training with just doing push-ups, pull-ups and sit-ups on my own and running on my own a lot. I kind of ran to like a lot of different practices. And at the same time, I did jiu-jitsu because I was like, well, I got to learn how to fight if I'm going to be a SEAL. So I was like, let me learn how to swim, let me learn how to fight, and then I'll supplement the rest. I'll figure out where it goes.
Swim training. So you got on the swim team, but they don't do the combat side stroke on the swim team. So how did you learn the combat side stroke?
So they do freestyle, and then we do all the strokes, but I was primarily a breaststroker, which is probably the most translatable to side stroke. And then I just asked my coach, I was like, how do I do this? Like, how's the thing? And they actually like taught me how to do it. And then I did a lot of research on my own, like looking at, like there was, I think there was some videos on the SEALSWIC page that actually had like how to do the combat side stroke. So I like did those, or I looked at those and I was like, all right, let me try to do these. And if I couldn't figure it out, I just showed it to my coach. I was like, how do I do that? Like, I don't really know. So they helped me figure it out and it was awesome. It was, on a side note, swimming is something I highly recommend people doing, not just because like it's a good skill to have. It is hard. It is not easy. And prior to Buds, like I kind of think it gives you like a good edge on being like trying to be as comfortable as you can being super uncomfortable, which is the water.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's probably a whole different thing to do the side stroke in a pool and then do it out there in the ocean surf, right?
It's completely different. Yeah, like it's wild. Like I remember like doing, I was like, once I like got like did the PSTs, I was like doing well. I was like, this is easy. How does anyone fail this? And then I did it in the ocean. I was like, I'm like swimming in like zigzags because like you're not really, you have to like look up and guide. You don't have a line on the bottom to like show you where to go. So you're just kind of like, it's actually a lot harder than you think on the ocean. So
yeah, not to mention salt water and current and cold,
it's
and
freezing,
all of it.
Yeah.
The Pacific is cold. People don't realize that.
San Diego seems like you're like, oh, it's in San Diego, it's going to be really nice. Since I moved back out here, I don't think I've been in the water since because I'm scarred.
Wow. Well, that's great. So you were able to pick up those skills by looking at a resource on some website called sealswick.com. Huh. Go figure. And you didn't have a problem with the run?
No. I just ended up, I think I played soccer my whole life, so I was always running. So mm-hmm. I just never like really timed myself until I got serious about training. I think I just kind of looked at like different regimens on like how to get good, which I think was again on the website. It either gave you some resources to go like look at like, hey, if you want to get good at running or like want to figure out a plan, like maybe look at some of these videos or maybe look into this person. And then as I did my own research outside of that too, I was like, okay, there's running programs that can get you here, or and especially I think now there's a lot of books out for like Buds training in specific. Mm-hmm. So that's awesome. I'm glad those things are out there.
So you got through boot camp.
Mm-hmm.
You went to prep school?
Yes, sir. Yeah, in Great Lakes.
Yep. And then came down here to Buds. What was that first Buds experience like for you?
It was really cool. I started with class 311 and I remember the last class I went through, they went through like in the winter time. So I guess it was like almost, I guess around like December timeframe. And I went through in like the February for like Hell Week. And I remember just, we heard all the horror stories. Everyone's like, they got like decimated. A lot of people got sick. A lot of people got rolled. A lot of people got dropped. A lot of people quit. And everyone's like, the mass hysteria was starting to build. And you're like, oh God, like, why are they all quit? Like, why is it that bad? Like, holy cow. And then you finally get the Buds and I'm like, if it's that, like, it's just a PST, right? Like, I mean, didn't people practice this before they went? I was like, isn't that like the whole, I've seen like the Buds documentaries that they did boats and logs, but like, and like the surf torture, but I didn't realize like that was the thing that like, that's what made people quit. And in those videos, they don't really show like how much you do them. So I was like, I'm like, it's just the PST is the hard part. As long as I pass out, I'm good. And then I got here and people were like, no, dude, it's boats and logs. I was like, what do you mean? Don't we do that like a couple times? They're like, dude, the whole time. I was like, oh, dang, that's not going to be that cool. So I was like, well, we're here now. We might as well just do it. So it was such a cool experience, but it was really hard. And I was the youngest kid in my class. Me and a couple other guys were like 18 when we actually came to Buds. So it was cool to like have like the younger crew, because everyone's always counting you out as like the young guy. So it was, for me, it was almost like you always had a chip on your shoulder being a young guy. You were like, no one's going to be right that I quit. Like, no one's going to be like, oh, we expected him to quit. I was never going to fulfill someone's prophecy like that. Like, for me, it was going to be like, I'm getting through. I said since I was 14, I'm going to get through. I'm doing it right now. So it was really, really hard. Every single day was the hardest thing I've ever
done. Did you ever have that moment of clarity where you kind of like, were like, wow, did I do the right thing here?
After Hell Week.
Yeah.
After Hell Week is when I like, I was like, because you're so driven and you're like just thinking of like one evolution at a time. And then like you get through Hell Week and then you're like it's just such an intense experience. Like, mm-hmm. it's traumatic almost. And you're kind of like at the end of it, you're like, did I do the right thing? Did I put myself through like all this stuff, years of in my mind of like training for this, and do like, is it worth it? Was it worth it? And like, obviously there's that times like, is it worth it? And you have to sit there and think about it. And that question got answered for me just every day. I was like, after Hell Week, like, it was like, cool. Yeah. This is still worth it to me. This is still worth it to me. Got through SQT, went to the medic school. I was able to get through that. I was like, this is worth it. I'm hitting the goal. I got to the platoon. We did the workup. We did everything. And once you're at the platoon and you do your workup, it's just like, it is the coolest thing ever. Like, it was like, dude, I'm doing the things in the video I saw. I was like, this is so cool. So it was worth it. There was that mental clarity. I was like, I hope this was worth it. I put my body through a lot, and I can definitely attest that it is.
Yeah. Were you on West Coast team or East Coast team?
I was East Coast team. So I did two deployments over at four, and I did both of them to Europe.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. Let me backtrack a little bit to the special operations tactical medic training, because we do have a lot of guys who are interested. See, who thought the same thing as you. Yeah, I'd like to be a SEAL and I'd like to be a medic. Is there such an animal? Yes, there is.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, so when I, at the end of SQT, you're kind of sorting out orders, and they're like always slotting to get medics. So if you desire to be a medic, you put in for it in like your dream sheet, and you're like, I want to do it. So right after SQT is when they would send you to medic school. So like, most guys go straight to their team and then they get their schools after that. Medic's different because it's such a long school. And at the time of me going through, we were still sending SEALs over to the Army course, so Special Operations Combat Medics course over in Fort Bragg. So we spent like 10 months to a year with the Army out there, and that was a really cool course. But a lot of my friends that I joined, that we did like the medic course with, they ended up, whenever they took shore duties, they came, and since the Navy the NSW stood up their own medical course, so it's called SOD-M. So a lot of the guys that I went through in the Army course, they're over there standing up that schoolhouse and like teaching it, and they've really revamped the curriculum. Like, a lot, I think at a time,
it's a lot shorter, right?
It's a lot shorter, but it's also like, the quality didn't go away. I think when they initially made the course, it was kind of like, is it going to be as good? Like, that's always they don't want the quality surrender, right? But they also want it faster. So I think in the beginning, in its growing stages, it was like the quality wasn't what they wanted. But as it's just evolved, that course, it's just gotten so much better, and it's on par with what the Army have, if not better. I think they make quality medics faster.
Tell me a little bit about that SOTM course. If I wanted to be the medic, what exactly does that mean? What am I going to do? What am I going to learn to do in the SOTM course?
Yeah, so this is actually really cool. It's such a really cool thing to talk about, because it's you are learning to be that guy that when things are at the heightened stressed period, not even just the op, when things are going really, really wrong on the operation, they're expecting you to know and save your buddy. And it's going to be your friend. You've worked with this guy, or probably it might be people you're working with or been working with a couple months. So to be the medic, they're constantly stressing that throughout the training. It's hey, get all this right, because this is going to be somebody you know sometimes. So don't overlook it. And they give you this realistic feel of being able to train in real life, not real life scenarios, but they make the scenarios very realistic. So that way you get the most out of the training. And by the end of it, you feel like you can definitely help your buddy. You feel super confident that you can do it. Whereas when you first start the training, they're you're going to have to save your buddy. And you're I don't know anything. I don't count on me yet. Pretty much. And by the end of it, you're yeah, absolutely. I feel very confident that I can do that.
So we're probably not talking about open heart surgery, but
mm-hmm. No,
triage not. Medicine.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, right. As far as what medics are concerned, it's I think the best comparison is a paramedic with just a little bit broader scope of practice for the skills. Meaning okay, they initially, somebody gets hit, and you have to triage the patient. So you have to win the firefight. Then you have to get your buddy out of there. Then you have to stop whatever is happening, whether that's a massive hemorrhage, whether that's an airway obstruction, and then run through your entire algorithm that they run you extensively through. And from there, you're just, each patient's so different, so you're constantly always trying to level that person up to get them to a higher level of care. So it's like you kind of just said, it's triaging. Okay, if we have multiple of these people, who needs to go first if there's only a limited amount of assets?
Right. So you take care of the immediate problem,
mm-hmm.
Stop the bleeding, for instance, sucking chest wound, whatever.
Yeah.
Get them stabilized and then ready for evac.
Correct.
That's pretty much it.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
And that sounds really simple. It's not.
Yeah, it's such a long process.
And it's
yeah.
pretty hairy. You're under fire, or you got, adrenaline rush, the whole thing. But that is the difference between life and death, I think, for most of the... For guys who have been hit pretty hard, mm-hmm. that can mean all the difference, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It's that pre-hospital care, and all the doctors in the hospital really harp on it, and that's why you see a lot of the hospitals being so invested in the pre-hospital setting. So, because a lot of that initial, how the patient's going to do later really depends on how they are responding, in the beginning, or how they're being treated in the beginning too. If you give them a treatment that's not warranted, you could hurt this patient even more and cause more of a problem. So it's that pre-hospital care is just so important.
So you got a couple of really exciting aspects to your SEAL training. You've gone through the whole pipeline here at Center, the training pathway for SEALs, BUDS. That's quite an experience all by itself in SQT. And then you have the tactical medicine training. So you checked off the original block right there about being a medic,
yeah.
combat medic.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're assigned to a team. You got your pumps out to the theater. You come back, and then you got into ATC for combatives training, for combatives instructor. How did that happen?
So... while I was over at Team 4, we have different phases of the cycle, but one of those phases is professional development. Just means they send you to schools that will, as an individual operator, will enhance your ability as an operator. So one of those schools is combatives instructor course, which I have always done martial arts since I was 14. So when I like had an I had the opportunity to go to this course. It was a month long out here in San Diego, and it was just all the things I was already doing on my as my hobby, just for work for a month. So I got to come out here, and once I completed the course, I was like the combatives instructor for my platoon.
Now, we get that question a lot from people. Do you get to pick those schools, or does the team pick them for you?
It's a little bit of both. So as like when you're new into the platoon, you're always putting, like, even as like an older guy, you're still always going to be putting like your dream, like your wish list down. You're like, hey, I would, let's say it was being a sniper. Like, I, as a new guy, I want to be a sniper. Okay, cool. That's a very big qualification that has a lot of responsibility. Maybe the chief is probably going to reserve that spot for someone with more experience. But here's some other courses. We have like specific requirements for each platoon that need to be filled. Let's go ahead and like, hey, you take these courses. And if you take like, if you're the guy that when you come to the platoon, you're like, hey, I'll do whatever course you need me to do. I'd prefer if it was something that got me towards being the sniper that I want to be, or being the breacher, or being the medic. If it was courses that could get me there, that would be awesome. But ultimately, like, I'm here for the platoon. Like, that's what every chief in OIC and everyone in their platoon wants to hear, especially from a new guy.
Yeah. Be a teammate.
That's really what it is, yeah. So, like, it's a little bit of both. Like, you can request, and sometimes requests will get filled. But there are other schools that are like, hey, we got to send somebody to this.
Yeah.
Like, all right, cool. I'm there.
Send you need me there. A comms guy.
Exactly. Yeah.
You're the guy.
Most people aren't really wanting to go to comms right away, but then they're like, all right, well, we need somebody to do it. And you're like, okay, cool. Well, they'll do it.
Leads to JTAC, and who knows?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's go back to the nitty gritty stuff here, the MMA. So you got into professional MMA, mm-hmm. where you're actually part of a circuit.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit more about that.
So once I got to be a combatives instructor out here, I started doing some amateur fights in the area. So I was fighting for one of the local promotions around here, just trying to get my experience together. And I was competing a lot in no-gi grappling, which is just pretty much submission wrestling. So I was staying pretty active on the scene with all of that. And then a European promotion that decided to set their roots in America for like the first time, set it in San Diego. And fortunate for me, that was right around when I was going, when I wanted to go pro, and when I was kind of done being in the amateur circuit. So the organization is called Cage Warriors. If you've heard of Conor McGregor, it's the league he came out of before he went to the UFC. So it's a very well-established league. And Conor McGregor is the most famous for that, but like there's been tons of fighters that go into the UFC after this one. It's been back in June, I was supposed to make like my professional debut on there. The last couple days, my opponent ended up having to pull out due to like an illness. So I had to wait till September to do that. And then I had my first fight in December, like professional fight in December. I ended up winning by TKO in the second round.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And so the next one's right here on the horizon. Probably by the time folks hear this, it'll be over.
Yeah.
But that'll be match number two professionally
two and
for
oh,
you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then kind of moving forward from there. Somebody might ask, well, how do you do this and do a Navy SEAL career at the same time?
It has to be at a short command to have that. To have the dedication to be a professional in a sport, but also to be a professional in your job, you have to be in a spot where you don't have, if I'm in a platoon, I wouldn't be able to do this because
right.
I would need to be there for the platoon, and it wouldn't be fair for them if I was fighting, and that's really ultimately what you need to be. So being at combatives where I can go teach the skills that I'm learning allows me like the training schedule that I can get to train to be a professional fighter. To answer your question shortly, it's without the Navy is supportive of it. And it's been the fact that they're so supportive is why I'm able to do these things. And I'm just super grateful for it too.
I would suspect the Navy sees that they might be getting something out of that too, because of the experience of your, matches in MMA. There's techniques perhaps that you can bring over to the curriculum and add to that.
Yeah, and you know, and that's like, that's kind of how I like, that's how I think of it too, and that's how I hope that everyone sees it, especially as like the rotation of commands come. I hope that's how they see it. It always like sometimes feels guilty because it's like this is like the thing I love doing. I love fighting and I love being a SEAL. So it was like I got to be at a job where I could do both of those things. So for me, it just kind of like it's always like a little bit of like a guilty feeling. I'm like, I'm doing the things I love. Like this is it doesn't feel like a job to me. So
what's next up for you? We know you have this match coming up in a couple of days, but the outlook beyond that,
as far as MMA or career wise,
both.
Cool.
As a SEAL and as an MMA fighter, what's next?
Yeah, so I'm extremely fortunate that the Navy allows me to like fight, and I'm actually about to move over to the outreach program from being combatives instructor to the outreach program out here, and we're gonna go to local tournaments or tournaments around the country too, and I'll be competing at them, and wherever I'm fighting, we'll be able to do the outreach there. So that's awesome. And then as far as my career for no-gi grappling and MMA goes, I'm looking to just try to break through on the ADCC circuit, and essentially that's like the Olympics for like jiu-jitsu on like the private side. It's not really like, it's kind of hard to describe, but that's the easiest comparison I can give to people. You have to qualify for the tournament through trials, and then once you win the trials, you go to the tournament and you have to try to win the tournament. So for
like the Kumite, right?
Kind of. But yeah, so that's called ADCC, and then so I'm looking to win that and make a name for myself in the grappling field. And then for MMA, the goal is for me to, I want to make it to the UFC, and I want to like win a championship there as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
And where are you at in your SEAL career now?
So right now I'm currently about 9.5 years in, and now since I've been at combatives for a couple of years now, and since just because of the way the rotation has to work, I'm just going to come over here and do the rotation, and then by the time I'm done with the outreach, I'll either transition to the reserves, or if fighting's continually going the way at like in an upward trajectory, but if it's not, or I decide that fighting's not what I want to do anymore, like as far as like a profession, then back to a platoon for me. That's ultimately, because this, I think either way, when I'm done fighting, whether I'm a little older or not, I'll probably be going back to the platoon, just because, I mean, they've given me this opportunity to see out a dream, not really having to do with the military, and kind of working with me to figure out like how we can work with each other to make it work. So, I mean, I'm just super grateful for it, and I definitely don't take for granted. And I don't want to like misspeak or misrepresent a community by saying like, oh yeah, like war is all about X, Y, and Z. I've only done non-combat deployments. I got a chance to learn and teach about war and do my fundamental form of warfare in the cage. But after that, all that's done, probably back to the platoons for me.
Yeah. Most people don't know that we have two reserve SEAL teams.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
One on the East Coast and one on the West Coast. We don't advertise it a lot. And it's not something you can get to as a non-SEAL.
Like, correct.
You got to be an active duty SEAL first. Do your time. Then you can elect to go into a reserve SEAL team. But you can't be a reservist first and then try to lad over into a reserve SEAL team. You got to come here. You got to go through the buds. You got to do active tours. And then after that, you have the opportunity. And you found out about that as an option when you're active duty.
Which is awesome. Yeah. Like, because I think a lot of guys, myself included, like, this is something you've spent a good deal of your life doing. And it's kind of hard to walk away. Like, even if you're like, good job teed up and like you're good, you've done everything great in your career, you've always, I think everyone you talk to, just they still have like that hesitancy of walking away from something they've done most of their lives. Like I grew up in the teams. I'm 27 now. I joined when I was 17, so my entire adult life has really been this. So I think personally for me, and I think a lot of other guys may feel this way, is like having the reserves is an option to be able to just keep my foot in the door and affiliated to the community in some way or form, like still allows you to breathe a little, like, all right, I can go chase like some ambitions in the real world, and then hey, if I want to come back to the military side, I have my foot in the door where I can go back if I want to, or just do my one weekend a month.
Yeah, they call those guys up all the time. Like
all the time, yeah.
There's always a reserve augment going out with the teams where there might be a shortfall or something. And so those guys still get plenty of opportunities to go deploy if they want to. Yeah. And if you were, let's say you were getting ready to get out and you're like, okay, I'm gonna stick with the reserves, the reserve SEAL teams, just to keep my foot in.
Yeah.
What would your day job be?
Fighting for me. But yeah, I would try to keep my career as fighting, but also just because the skills I've developed in the military, it could go just a bunch of different ways. Like with hey, maybe we figure out a way to get combatives out to some of these local law enforcement areas, like local police departments, maybe Border Patrol, SWAT, whatever Homeland Security entity would like training. Like maybe that could be a good way of getting your foot in the door that way. And for me, it's combatives. That's just kind of, I think that's just where my life has always been and always will be. But like, I think for any of the other SEALs, it's like that aren't super, super into combatives. Like there's a ton of things in our job that translate into like the law enforcement sector, where like you can either be a law enforcement officer or you can go ahead and help them train for their things too.
Well, you've been in for 10 years, so you've seen some guys get out. What kind of jobs are they getting?
So some people are doing things like that. A lot of guys that I have known have gotten their MBAs and are off into some really high-end business jobs, and they're doing very successful for themselves. So that's kind of a lot of jobs like that. And honestly, it's kind of hard because you can kind of do whatever you want. Like, I think a lot of businesses outside of like, a lot of businesses when like you're transitioning out are very excited to get a SEAL because I think they know what they're getting. They're getting someone that works really hard, someone who's very dedicated to what they want to do, and that can work in a team-based environment. So for businesses, like that's easy for them. And also like leadership positions too. That's like if they need a manager, they probably know that they can fast track that SEAL like soon after whatever grad school they do or whatever undergrad they do into whatever business field that they want to. So the world's kind of their oyster, you know. It's kind of great. I have a friend that's he's a SEAL right now. He's gonna go put in for his officer package. He wants to go be a fighter pilot in the Navy. Like, he's gonna go do some crazy things. I'm like, so the world's your oyster. Like, that's a completely different route. He's staying in the military, but he could do something similar on the private sector for that too. So
yeah.
But yeah, there's just so many cool things that I've just seen, like the creativity a lot of people like doing jobs. And also some people are just content to chill. Like they've done, for me, I've only done 10 years. Some of these guys have done 20 years and like, they're like, I'm cool. I'm good. I don't need to, like they can retire. Now they can like have like what, like some passive income coming through, and maybe they get a job that's just something that just brings extra money into, and they get to enjoy their families a little bit more too.
Yeah. I think that about covers it for today. We got to run along. We're starting to run out of time here.
Yeah.
Bobby Winther, MMA fighter, Navy SEAL. Appreciate you being on the show today.
Cool. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And this was The Only Easy Day Was Yesterday. I'm Scott Williams. Until the next time.
If you've been skating through bus so far, you will not do so any longer.